I'm Deborah Anzinger, director of NLS, and I'll be talking with photographer Marlon James tonight about his work. Marlon currently has a show up at NLS that will be closing this week, and we're happy to get to talk to him while the show is still up. You can send us any questions you have by email at any time during this broadcast to nlskingston@gmail.com. That's NLS, which stands for New Local Space, Kingston@gmail.com, and we'll answer them at the end of this portion of the segment. For those of you that are not familiar with us, New Local Space is an artist-run initiative, visual arts initiative, and an alternative exhibition space in Kingston, founded out of the need for spaces in Jamaica, both physical and virtual, that support artists working in new and inspiring ways, and for infrastructure that connects these artists with local audiences and the international art world in an open forum. The organization is a non-profit subsidiary of the production house Creative Sounds Limited. Marlon James is a photographer, as I mentioned before, and he was born here in Kingston, Jamaica, and is currently based in Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago. His work has been exhibited nationally and internationally, including shows at the National Gallery of Jamaica, the Gallery of Mississauga, Canada, the IDB Cultural Center in Washington, D.C., the Art Museum of the Americas in D.C., Barch House, London, and Alice Yard in Trinidad. He studied at the Edna Manley College and graduated in 2003. His current exhibition at NLS deals with portraiture exclusively, and I'm going to read a short essay written by Nicole Smythe Johnson about Marlon's portraits before we get into any questions. Mike Johnson starts her essay with an epigraph from Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert M. Persig. It reads, "People go through huge portions of their lives without much consciousness of what's immediately around them. The media has convinced them that what's right around them is unimportant, and that's why they're lonely. You see it in their faces. First a little flicker of searching, and then when they look at you, you're just kind of an object. You don't count. You're not what they're looking for. You're not on TV." Smythe Johnson starts her essay, "Portraiture, regardless of the medium, is a loaded form. It has existed for thousands of years in cultures across the globe, but until fairly recently was largely the domain of the very important or the very wealthy. For much of its history, it was an illustration of power, a carefully orchestrated business, conspicuously trading in symbols, mired in convention. In the contemporary moment, much of that has changed. With the increased availability of photographic equipment and the rise of social media, almost anyone can have their portrait taken and publicly displayed via the internet. Ordinary people increasingly use the photographic image as a means to express the self, utilizing conventions, but also creating new systems of meaning. New ways to index sexy, powerful, intelligent. Portraiture has been democratized. Web 2.0 and the digital avatar a la Facebook has made it so that it's not just Henry VII or Princess Kate who need to think carefully about how to present and record themselves. High school students do it, grandparents, newborns, if via their parents. We are all engaged in the business of determining which portraits are Facebook worthy. For me, Marlon James's photography is profoundly sensitive to this context. His portraits, which are the bulk of his artistic output and the subject of this exhibition, engage this democratization, eschewing the usual suspects, the beautiful, the powerful, the important, in favor of the banal, and what Smythe Johnson calls the unlovely. He captures the ordinariness of people, those aspects we might deliberately ignore or unwittingly overlook in any other way. Even the artists, filmmakers, and musicians that he photographs, who could be construed as celebrities of a sort, are only incidentally so. They are first ordinary people drawn from his immediate environment. Friends, students he encounters working at the Edna Manley College, someone he saw at a party. They are represented that way. This is a departure from both classical portraiture and the more recent social media variety. The effort here is not to portray the power or sex appeal of his subjects. In his own words, James is interested in having his subjects unveil in front of his lens. He has said of his engagement with his subjects, "I don't like to impose any directions on them. I just let them be, and the results have been fascinating, especially to me." And his subjects do reveal. Yet his body of work demonstrates a deliberation that belies the deadpan documentary overtones. For one, it must be acknowledged that James's selection of subjects suggests a bias towards countercultural figures. Both those acknowledged as such and those merely dismissed by the dominant culture. For this reason, an interpretation whereby the work is understood as rewriting counterculture as mainstream or exemplary is valid. He's at once interrogating portraiture's association with inscribing privilege and utilizing that association to privilege the counterculture and the subaltern. Additionally, as much as there is realism in the content, there is a subtle but effective aestheticization via form. For all their pocked skin, ample curves, and latex gloves, these subjects are framed and lit as kings and queens, as rock stars and debutantes. Perhaps it is his background in commercial and fashion photography that facilitates the application of a glamorizing gaze, while maintaining his stated intention to reveal the individual beneath the layers. Perhaps it is his Edna-manly furnished familiarity with classical portraiture that allows him to maintain the spectra of classicism while indulging the contemporary. Nonetheless, what might have been a tension in the work is a pleasing contrast, ordinary content with regal form. Having said that, I can now return to my admittedly odd choice of epigraph. What Persick touches on, his description of this particularly modern form of loneliness, is a question to which James's work seems to me to respond. This is the context in which it finds resonance. His subjects are always who he's looking for. The gaze of his lens is always adoring, always genuinely curious, and a little bit awestruck. I thought that was a really, really good essay by Nicole. She touched on what seems to be the driving force behind your work. But can you talk, Marilyn, about what your process was like for you leading up to the show and how the idea for the show materialized?
Well, Deborah, thanks for having me here. And for all those who are listening, thanks for coming and joining us on the Hangout. A process has always been the same since I started this whole project. I had wanted to answer a question for myself, which is, who was I as a Jamaican? What was my Caribbean identity or Jamaican identity? So I started out by looking within my artistic community that I, you know, where I went to school, Edna Manley, and I also worked there. You know, I started to look there, photographing colleagues, you know, students, even people who worked in the institution. And I continue just to look around and find those characters, which I find that tends to get glanced or looked over by people because I think they're insignificant. And I wanted to show people that all of us, you know, create this Caribbean. We're out of many one people. So I was just looking at that, and leading up to the show, it was interesting, you know. I mean, I was a bit nervous trying to get everything ready in time, you know, trying to get prints done and figuring out what images were the best images to show, you know, things that had not been repeated before, seen by others. So, you know, I was constantly trying to get new images and work on stuff, and to this day I'm still just working on images.
Cool. I noticed you said, you know, your search for this idea of Jamaicanness was an impetus for you. But there have been visitors to the show that have sort of questioned, you know, as you say, you photographed a lot of the immediate people from the immediate community in art school, and we've had visitors to the show that have been taken aback by the subjects in your portraits and sort of question the legitimacy of these people as being as being representative of a Jamaican identity, if there's really any such thing as a particular identity type associated firmly with Jamaica. But there have been people who question, I mean, do you have a response to that? And how do you feel? Do you feel that maybe you have an eye towards what could be seen as counterculture, as Smythe Johnson says in her essay? And what's your attraction? And what's your attraction to that, if you do even feel like, you know, that's true?
You know, I think that being in the Edemale, or working at the Edemale Art School, you know, I have seen all these young teenagers and young adults who are there probably searching for their own self, finding their own identity. And people who are aware of who they are and what they're about also attend that school. And I just always thought it was just a diverse little community of the people that represent Jamaica. And I'm not sure why anyone would not think that these people are not Jamaicans, because that was a part of the reason why I decided to photograph the people at art school mainly. Because I wanted to show that Jamaicans are not who we perceive them to be. You know, they're more than what the Americans or the Europeans might feel, or even local Jamaicans think a Jamaican should look like. You know, we're so diverse in our looks and fashion and, you know, even culture, because you have all these subcultures based on what we've been exposed to from cable television. So for anybody who says that, you know, these people are not true representations of Jamaica, then definitely that they're in their own bubble. You know, they have not been exposed. You know, these are people that walk the streets every day, take the buses, taxis. You know, some of them are chauffeured around by their parents, I think, or their drive and stuff like that. But yeah, they're there. They're all Jamaicans, and we just need to be more aware of them. You know, we just can't walk past them.
So can you tell me a little bit more about why you've chosen portraiture? I mean, because you're known primarily for portraiture. Why would you be able to share a little bit with us why it is that you've chosen portraiture as your primary means of expression? I mean, why portraiture? Let's look at these things. I mean, you seem to have a particular interest in identity. Is there any other reason why you found portraiture particularly attractive?
I think the reason why I found portraiture attractive was, I guess, from the influence of looking on other artists or other photographers. Richard Avedon was one of the key influences for me taking up portraiture as a means of documenting the people that I wanted to, you know, have it recognized. I felt that, you know, he had a body of work where he looked on the southern part of America, just the people, the blue collar persons, you know, who lived there. And I found the images to be so striking and to give so much information about who the individual could possibly be. I mean, because I don't know the story behind the person, you know, when you go in front of the camera, what they put out is what I read as who that person is. And I think that's why when I saw that, I thought that that could have been my way of trying to seek out my own question, which was, who are Jamaicans? What is a Jamaican? Can you identify a Jamaican just by visually seeing a person? So, and I, again, part of it was just the fashion culture of Jamaicans, you know. The art school had a diverse fashion trend and style, you know, not necessarily what society norms would go by. So I just felt that I wanted to, again, just to show that to people. And I wanted people to wake up and say that Jamaicans are not Rastafarians only. They're not people that wear kind of what you call those marinas and pants below the their buttocks and, you know, those stuff. You know, we're so much more. And that was really why I thought photography would have been the means of doing that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let me take it back a little bit to the exhibition and the physical features of it. One of the most notable features about NLS is the size of the space. It's remarkably small. But you are well known or known locally for showing your work in larger formats. What was it like for you showing your work in such a small space? And did it affect the way you thought about how your work operates or functions?
It was an interesting and eye-opening experience to have my work exhibited at NLS. I remember the first time I came by, I wasn't expecting to be that small, you know. And I was like, boy, I don't know how I want to do my work, because my mindset was that my work had to be displayed at large scale, because that's how I felt the impact would have been best received. But, you know, definitely by working with you, you know, I realized that no matter the scale, the image itself had the impact. You know, yes, I feel that the larger the scale, you know, the more it would command the attention of the viewer, but it didn't lessen the image itself. So I liked NLS for the intimate encounter exhibition, because, I mean, the images itself, you know, when I thought about it, was about me going to these persons' private or personal space and documenting them, showing an intimate encounter with me. And then I'm now showing it to the public. And then the space of NLS is so small and tight that it had to be that size, that scale, for people to really engage with the work, where they go up close and see the detail, the definition, you know, in the images. And it made me start to think about how I display work. You know, I always just felt larger is better, but, you know, at this point, you know, I can see how going even a smaller scale can still have that impact on viewers.
Do you has it opened up? I mean, yeah, NLS is a small space, and so you know, adapting to a situation is something that you have to do. I guess every professional has to do that, right? Whether you're in the arts or not. But do you think going forward, do you think that you have any new ways that you may want to show future work? Not necessarily smaller, but in just other ways from the norm of what you've done before.
Yeah, I have ideas about how I wanted to display work. Like, I think sometimes, because the subject matter that I'm doing is portrait photography, and I don't know if it just really is within Jamaica or just general. I was doubted that people were excited about buying portraits of persons I didn't know. And sometimes the idea came to me about projections, you know, if I could have multiple projections and almost project images of different persons on walls or on canvases, you know, and have the space just being all these projections, you know. Even if we came to a point where we could, you know, if it was inexpensive, or we could do things that were hologram based, you know, would be another way, you know, using technology to its full advantage, you know, and not necessarily going printing, you know, because it can be sometimes rough when, you know, as a artist and you know, using your own income to do prints, and, you know, and people like it. And I think, I don't know, I think sometimes it's good to print, though. And I think it's good to print on a larger scale, because the way I shoot, and because I want people to actually look on the image and see the detail, like the texture of the skin, if there's acne, if there's cuts or bruises, I want you to see all that definition very clearly. So I really think that's the reason why I like to print large, but also because of certain spaces I went to. Like, I think the first time I exhibited was at a National Gallery. I didn't want to print large, but you know, the curator, Verle Pope, had told me that, you know, if I didn't print necessarily large in that space that I was, you know, allotted, the image would almost disappear. So that was, you know, my first, you know, reason why I started. But then I thought about more why I wanted to print large, you know, and it wasn't just to wow people, you know, it was really just I wanted you to pay attention to these things, because the camera picks up these details that sometimes the human eye won't see at first glance, you know. And most of us can't actually walk up to subject matters and look them straight in the eye and look and see all these information, these details. So
and I think that kind of goes back to some of the comments coming in from visitors to the show, in that they've never seen people who look like this in everyday. And I think what you're saying about the camera picking up these things, and that maybe people are not necessarily willing to engage on a face-to-face, in-person basis, on an in-person basis, that I think people see and can. And I guess that's one of the reasons why we thought the Intimate Encounters would be such a good title for the exhibition, is that these are some of these things that people are there every day for people to see and engage. And even those scars, I mean, those scars could be perceived by the human eye. It's not that they're imperceivable by the human eye. It's just that, you know, for some reason we sort of glaze over these things.
And I also think that, you know, I should also admit that by doing photography or even doing portraits of persons, it actually made me, you know, really look at people. You know, before I was a person when I used to, you know, if I met persons, I would never look them straight in the eye. I was always kind of nervous to do that. But nowadays, I am more confident, and I guess because I want to look in the eyes so I can see and understand who I'm talking to. I think that's the next thing that happens to most of them. We're nervous or we're scared or we're just not that straightforward to look in someone is straight in the eyes, you know. I remember my father used to always teach me that when I gave a handshake, that the first thing you do is that you look the person in the eyes when you shake their hand. And it was the hardest thing for me to do at first, because sometimes you can feel intimidated by another person, you know, based on who they might be or what they're about. And I think also by doing these photographs at these scales or even on a small scale, it really does allow people to observe and see persons that they've always wanted to look at, but they'll probably be a little bit intimidated by them, you know, because of what they might, what the perception they have in the head of what this person might be, you know. I think, like, an example is the images I've taken of my friend Stefan Clark. A lot of people, when they see, even I, when I first met Stefan, I was intimidated by him. I was nervous to talk to him because I thought he'd bite my head off, you know. But, you know, after I got to know him, and he's really a nice guy, you know. But I think also when people see Stefan, because of his physical demeanor and, you know, his clothes he wears, a lot of people are intimidated. They don't want to approach him and talk to him because they're scared he's going to yell at them. He's going to, you know, shout and tell them this and that, you know. But, again, they're not going to do that. So they come to me as his friend to try to ask me to ask him questions. So it was just always interesting, that those little things that I noticed about the human, you know.
Cool. Awesome. I just want to remind anybody tuned in that if they have any questions, you can send it to nlskingston@gmail.com. N as in new, L as in local, S as in space, kingston@gmail.com. And we'll get to your questions at the end in about maybe another 10 minutes if we have any. Cool. So, I guess I also wanted to ask you, Marilyn, what were the criticisms, either negative or positive or both, that you've had regarding your work and or the exhibition Intimate Encounters? And could you just, if you've had any feedback, could you go into
I know that, well, from the exhibition at NLS and even before, a lot of persons have told me that I found my images to be very powerful and strong. And I never really got any negative feedback. I mean, the only criticism I've gotten outside of those were, you know, the question that people would ask me is like, why that person? Why do you photograph them? You know, which is warranted. And I explained, you know, based on whoever they're speaking about, you know, why I decided to photograph that individual. But generally, you know, people have always given me positive feedback on my work and felt that it was something that was needed. And I think for most people, they think that what I'm doing is not done by most artists or most photographers in Jamaica. I really am, like I said, like people have seen me to be a portrait photographer. I really have just kind of honed on that kind of like skill, I think, if you call it a skill, of trying to make people seem natural as possible. I like that idea, that thought of, you know, making persons, you know, feel like themselves and to kind of convey or show a bit of their personality in an image, which I think can be quite difficult because a lot of people, when the camera's in front of them, they tend to get nervous or they start to put on a show for the photographer or probably the person that might see the image because they want to, you know, portray this of themselves, you know, and it's somewhat of a skill, I think, to allow people just to try to forget all about that and just to be themselves, you know, not try to smile when you don't want to smile, because I can see in an image when a person is smiling and it's so fake, you know, or when you screw up your face because you want to look like a bad man. I'm like, you're really not a bad person, so why portray that? That's not who you are. And again, it's something that I see in the image, so that's the kind of stuff that I like.
Cool. Well, what projects are you working on now? Are you working on anything new?
Well, as you said before, I am now, you know, living in Trinidad, Porto, Spain, and I have started a project that I'm not sure where it's going to end up yet, but I'm starting this project called Night Shift. And basically what I'm doing is that I'm documenting people at night. I'm doing portraits at night. And I've started out by really looking at persons that are street vendors at night and also the consumers that are, you know, buying at night. I want to look at those individuals here in Trinidad. And outside of that, I'm trying to also just continue to do my documentation of individuals in the Caribbean. So I'm trying to do both a night scene and a day scene. You know, I want to do projects at Alice Yard here. And also, the next thing I want to do was this series, which I'm not sure the title of it, but it's all dealing with the family. I think I'm calling it the family series. But basically, I want to look on the diverse look of individuals, two or more persons that are a unit. It could be biologically, you know, a biological family, brother and sister, mother, father, daughter, or it could just be friends, colleagues that are always, you know, together, and that kind of friendship is almost like a family to them. And just to see who they are and probably to photograph in their own environment, to see the difference in fashion trend of individuals in that group and family, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of two projects I have in mind at this point in time.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you find that your process in Trinidad has changed at all? Do you find that being in Trinidad has changed how you work in any way?
No, I mean, no, it hasn't. I walk in Trinidad quite a bit, so when I walk, I'm really observant of the people I see on the streets and around me and stuff like that, and, you know, I think I've become a little bit more confident in myself and approaching people to ask them to allow me to photograph them, you know, like the last week Friday, I went to St. James in Trinidad, and I was just walking that lane, that avenue, and seeing individuals and approaching them and asking them if they would allow me to take a picture. Of course, you know, many of them were wondering why I wanted to photograph them, what's so important about them, you know, what's the use of the image, you know. And, you know, some people said yes, you know, some said no. It was cool, you know. I've come to terms that it's one or the other. You know, if I approach somebody and they don't want me to take a picture, I'll let them be, you know. It's not something that I'm trying to force anybody to do. I mean, but though I must admit, though, there are people that I really want to photograph, and if I see there's a possibility that I can sway their decision, I might persist a little bit just to see if they really, really don't want to do it, or they're just a little bit nervous about the whole situation. But yeah, I go about the same process I did in Jamaica. I think the only difference is that in Jamaica, I was in a community already where I was familiar with people. Here in Trinidad, I don't know anybody at all, really, you know, outside of the friends I have here. So it's a new ground for me, and just to, you know, be bold enough to approach people and ask for them to sit for a few minutes and take their pictures.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah, that's awesome. So what has the art scene been like in Trinidad so far?
I've actually enjoyed the art scene in Trinidad. You know, my first initiation to the art scene was going to an exhibition by Medulla Gallery. An artist there, Dean Arlen, he did some paintings, huge, wonderful paintings, kind of a collage of like graffiti along with his paintings and drawings and stuff like that. I really enjoy that exhibition. I've been to a couple exhibitions. That stand out to me was Dean Arlen, Steve Odwitt, whose exhibition is just coming on again from Medulla Gallery. Last night, I went to Alice Yard and Del Warner, who actually had something binary. What was the name of the exhibition again? Binary.
Solve?
Binary Solve. Right, Binary. Oh, yeah, he did that in NLS, and he had he continued that in Trinidad in Alice Yard, where he did.
Year of the Snake Eating Itself, I think is the name of it. Is it? The Year of the Snake Eating Itself?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the name of his exhibition. And yeah, it was interesting. He, you know, I spoke with one of the curators or directors for Alice Yard, and, you know, Rodell had just, you know, wanted a space to work in, and, you know, they told me that if I ever need a space just to work, that once no one's there or they have a residency happening there, that it's open and I should let them know. And that's what Rodell did. You know, he found a space that was available, and he just started to do work, you know, and then at the end of his process, you know, he just wanted to show people what was happening. And it was very interesting. It was a good night, you know, a good turnout, and just to see fellow people that were interested in art and just having conversation about what's happening within the art scene in Trinidad, you know. So I've been enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to many more exhibitions here.
Awesome. Cool. Are there any other artist-run spaces in Trinidad? I know Alice Yard is an artist-run space. Are there any other ones in Trinidad?
You know, not to my knowledge. So don't quote me that there is, but there isn't, or so I should say. But Alice Yard is the only one that I really know about, that is that space where individuals can come in if available to just work. You know, mm-hmm. I think they had others, but I think Alice Yard is the primary one right now.
Yeah. Cool. So, Marlon, are you coming back to Jamaica anytime soon? Do you have any projects that might bring you back here in the near future?
Yeah, you know, the last time I was in Jamaica, I was on a project, and I had to drive. I had to leave downtown Kingston late one evening, and I felt the need that I wanted to come back, and if I was to do anything, it would be continue that whole night shift process of photographing individuals at night. But I wonder if I could do that in Jamaica. I wonder if I could go to downtown and photograph the men playing dominoes late at night in downtown in parade, or the vendors who still are open at that hour trying to sell the last bit of goods if they allow me to take their picture at that hour. So I think I'd love to continue my night shift series back in Jamaica. And again, start in downtown and trying to almost beautify downtown Kingston, the architecture and the people that live there, you know. I think that's what I want to do if I come back. And I think I might be coming back if I come back possibly in August. I might be coming back before that. If, you know, if I come before that, it's probably because of another project or job I have to do or show in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
I'm glad that you asked me to be here.
Let me check in to see if we have any questions. Last time I checked, there were no questions.
Okay.
Let me check. Oh. Yeah, I don't think we have anything that has come in. Okay, so... Cool. Yeah, I think maybe we're just so thorough that no one has any questions.
Maybe. It's not the first time it has happened to me. I remember my artist talk here in Trinidad when I came for Pictures from Paradise, that mm-hmm. book I was publishing by Melanie Archer and Mara Brown. I give an artist talk, and after talking about my work, I probably wasn't as thorough as I am now, but after talking, like, you know, no one had questions, and I kind of felt like, really? Was I, what is the work that explanatory that I don't have to have anybody ask me a question? I felt a little bit weird, but, you know, I just like, you know, probably it is. I'm just, the work speaks for itself, so there's nothing really for me to say or anybody to ask, you know? So.
Perhaps. We can assume anything we want, so let's
do yeah. This. You know, we can. So I'm just hoping that, you know, that's the case here. And, I mean, even if it's not, then fine, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. It's cool.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thank you so much. So this broadcast is going to be archived on YouTube, on the NLS channel on YouTube. So we can share it with anyone that might be interested.
All right, cool. I definitely will do that, you know. I'm looking forward. And I look forward to, you know, coming back to Jamaica and seeing you and NLS. Hopefully, I can be back in time to see the new residency that you guys are trying to do on Kickstarter.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks so much.
Wilma, I keep on forgetting people's names. I'm so bad. But, yeah.
You have one question, Marlon. Sorry, before you go, one question okay. came from Trinidad. almost got off the hook there. Anyway, Marlon was into identity politics and homosexuality in Jamaica. What's the theme in Trinidad and Tobago so far?
What?
So I think the person thinks that that identity politics and homosexuality are underpinning themes in the work that's in the show currently.
Yeah. Okay.
And are there any other themes that have sort of cropped up that you've noticed in your work since Trinidad? You mentioned something about family yeah. life.
Yeah, well, I guess that's I looked at family, and I think With in regards to family, I also are looking at the whole thing. I mean, yes, I know that Trinidad is primarily East Indians or Indians versus blacks. So I'm also looking at that as a family unit of that kind of mix, interracial families that they have in Trinidad. And again, just even the kind of friends people have, you know, Trinidad is very close to Venezuela, so you have the Venezuelan in Trinidad, you have Syrians, Indians, blacks, you know, so just that dynamic, which I don't see in Jamaica, I want to look at. So I think that's what I'm looking at, really. Homosexuality or otherwise, it's neither there for me. I mean, I'm not trying to. Yeah, I mean, I think I've photographed, well, I have, not think. I have photographed somebody in Trinidad that, you know, who's a cross-dresser and stuff like that. So that was interesting, and I think I do, I'm going to probably photograph for other individuals like that as well while I'm here in Trinidad. So it's really, as I say, I'm looking for individuals that I think stand out to me, I looked it up. I was thinking, like, yeah, they are like society anomalies, you know, that I'm really focused on. That's what I really am looking at. People that defy the traditional or the typical society norm. So that is the trend on what I'm kind of looking at, hopefully, to find here in Trinidad.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I don't know if that answered the question or I've just, you know, beat around the bush, but no, that's the best I can.
I mean, I definitely think you answered it, or at least gave an idea of what to expect. I'm certainly excited to see what comes out of this body of work. But you're also working on something for Small Axe, aren't you?
Oh yeah, well. That was a commissioned job from Small Axe. The theme from that that commission was Visual Life of a Catastrophic History. And before I left for Trinidad, I had completed that project, and I had looked at documenting and photographing young adults that were bleaching their skin. And I primarily photograph young adults
bleaching
in the Kingston Club.
Bleaching their skin, right? Bleaching.
Yeah, skin bleaching. Mm-hmm. So I had focused primarily young adults that were in the Kingston 12 area. And I had submitted 12 images, if I'm not mistaken, for the project. So they were very pleased with the images I sent. One of them are actually displayed in the exhibition. The whole article, I have called it Kingston Blackout, Kingston 12, Jamaica. Mm-hmm. So that image was seen in the Soul exhibition there, Intimate Encounters. So if anybody went to the exhibition, they'd have an idea of what kind of imagery they'd be seeing in Small Axe. It will come out in July of this year.
Cool. Oh, Marlon, I have one more question that came in.
Really? From Trinidad again?
No, this one is not from Trinidad.
Okay, cool.
I'm not sure where this one is from. But does Marlon think that by trying to develop these categories of defining and identifying certain things about Jamaicans, that he may subversively be reinforcing stereotypes or even blatantly be reinforcing stereotypes? If so, how does he plan to open up the idea of encounters by introducing more diversity, either conceptually or otherwise, as working with photography and images that are so representative can become oppressive?
Wow.
There are a couple parts to that question. I don't know if you want to break it into...
I'll try to break it down as best as I can. I don't think I wasn't trying to showcase the, what do you call it?
Stereotypes.
the stereotypes of Jamaica. I was really trying to break that barrier. I really wanted to show what is not the typical person you'd find in Jamaica, you know, or not the stereotype of Jamaicans. That was really my whole objective of what I looked for when I started my project in Jamaica. So I don't even know if I've ever photographed anybody that was the stereotype, you know, of a Jamaican. I don't think any individual I've photographed would be considered the typical Jamaican in my eyes, you know. So I've not done that. I'm not looking to do that at all. Not to say that those individuals are not interesting, but they're very much seen to the public because they are the public, they are the society, they are the norm. So I'm always seeking the person that might not be so welcomed in, you know, the slightly outcast of, you know, the society. I kind of look towards seeing, you know. So I don't know. What was the other part? Was there another part to that?
The other part had to do with photography and images in general that are representative can actually become oppressive. In other words, I guess their ability or their attempt, their indexical nature can sort of make things a lot more concrete.
Yeah.
Do you, and the person asks, how do you plan to open up the idea of these encounters?
Well, I know that I understand what I'm saying about, you know, the images, I guess you say, could be oppressive. I guess, like, for example, going to inner city community and photographing people in that area and probably showing somewhat of the area in which you live, and it might be a poverty-stricken area, so I'm just kind of highlighting that area. I'm trying to, you know, I really have always tried to find the beauty in things, and even in areas where our places are people who are not said to be the most attractive or the most luxurious place, I would try to find what I see to be the beauty within that area. And I can only hope, I can never tell anybody that they will see the beauty that I see in these places and individuals. So even like I told you, the whole idea of going back to downtown and photographing it at nighttime, I think there's a kind of mystified beauty of downtown at night. Just the lights that have been left on the buildings, and despite how derelict the buildings might be or how abandoned they are, there is a lot of beauty there. And, you know, I would photograph that with an individual's place, which I would try to place them kind of perfectly in that space so they can actually have that kind of conversation against that urban environment and themselves. So I really just hope that my images will be seen that way, that I'm not trying to condemn or to oppress individual, but trying to find a way of uplifting them, you know. That's really what I want to do. I want to uplift individuals, even in that bleaching series. As much as people might, you know, scowl at the whole fact of what the individuals are doing to themselves, I myself find somewhat them to be beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing their own way of finding that beauty, and I saw that beauty in the individuals that I photographed, you know. And the individuals themselves are not unattractive. They're very beautiful people, you know. They're just doing somewhat what people might find a disservice to themselves by bleaching their skin, but I still find that they are beautiful.
Yeah. So would you say there's an element of social activism in your work, or?
I try. It was never really, you know, the main point at first, but I realize more and more that it's a topic that comes up for me. You know, I try to, you know, do somewhat of a social commentary in my images as well.
We have time for one more question that just came in. More question. Could Marlon talk a bit about his process in editing images? Does he take multiple shots of each person, and how does he edit in order to decide what makes the final cut, and what does he look for in finding his best, quote-unquote, best images of each individual?
Okay. I do take several images of individuals. Most times what I do is that if I'm, like, doing a night series, any series really, I have my camera, my tripod, and I definitely like to move the face around. I generally find a position of the body that I really like and an angle that I like. And then it just comes around to the facial expression or where the face is looking. So I'll give slight gestures or even suggestions of where I want the eye to be placed or where to look. And I generally don't like individuals looking into the lens of the camera because they're kind of looking down. So I always have them look above my head rather than looking into the lens of the camera. Outside of that, editing-wise, how would I know what makes a shot? I don't know if I can actually even define or tell anybody how I picked the winning shot. You know, it's just something that jumps out at me, and I just think that it's just amazing, and it strikes me, and I just feel that's the one. So it's a series of photographs, and just like any photographer, you start to edit and you start to see what, you know, makes a cut, you know, whether it is that you accidentally cut off a bit of the toe, or was the eyes looking at the same place, what did they blink? The posture of the individual also is a key factor for me sometimes, you know, how they look. And I always want individuals to look very powerful in my images as well, you know, to be, as Nicole has said, almost regal, like kings and queens. So I've always wanted them to feel, you know, very much confident within themselves, that they're not ashamed of who they are. They're very proud of themselves. So I look for those kind of elements when selecting an image. So when I find that, then I choose it, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess we're out of time, and I think you answered those questions very thoroughly. And they were very last minute, so I thank you for staying on some extra time to answer them.
Yeah, I'm glad people are sending questions as well. I'm happy for that. It's cool.
All right. Well, we'll just say another quick goodbye. Thank you so much, Marilyn. We just had Marilyn James on, and that was about a 45-minute interview. And we'll have, again, I'll mention that we have it archived on YouTube, and we'll have it posted to the NLS website, so you can listen to it anytime if you weren't able to tune in live. Thank you. Thanks, Marilyn.
Thanks, Deborah, for having me.
Okay, night.
Good night.